Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of Closer Encounters, the show where you, the listener, is also the guest. I am your host, Clarence Mitchell, coming to you live from somewhere in Minnesota. Closer Encounters is streaming live from Blog Talk Radio. We are also live on Facebook, YouTube, and Google Hangouts. All of our newest updates, check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Closer Encounters Radio. Don't forget to like, follow, and share. Would you like to be a special guest on Closer Encounters? Or do you know somebody that would like to be a special guest on Closer Encounters? Then just shoot us an email at closerencounters.info@gmail.com. That's closerencounters.info@gmail.com. Have you ever witnessed a UFO? Or seen something that you just cannot explain? Or maybe you've had your very own closer encounter. You believe in the ancient alien theory? We talk about this and much, much more. If you have a story, or maybe a question that you would like to get answered, give us a call. The number here is 347-989-1008. Again, the number 347-989-1008. Give us a call here at Closer Encounters. I'd love to talk to you. Well, hello, and welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Closer Encounters, the show where you, the listener, although also the guest. So you know, I'm your host, Mitchell, and tonight is episode 106, and pretty cool thing, and just seen it advertised on TV, on Science Channel, and a couple other different channels. I thought we'd talk about it tonight. This year marks the 40th year for the movie Closer Encounter of the Third Kind. Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. One of my favorite all-time movies since the day it came out, and I watched it. And, yeah. Really, really cool show. Hey, it looks like we have Tim with us here tonight. Let's get him booted up here. Pollard, how are you, sir?
Hi, Clarence. I'm doing good, sir. Doing wonderful. How are you?
Good. A little rainy, drizzle day. Of course, it happened in the past couple of days up here. I don't know if we're getting some of that weather from Texas or what, but yeah, it's been kind of chilly, you know, down in the 50s last couple of days. But the other than that, you know, not too bad.
Down in the 50s?
Good. Yeah. Much above 56 day today, so yeah.
Wow,
crazy. Welcome to Minnesota.
We're having very, very mild weather down here in Oklahoma. in this part of Oklahoma anyway, highs in the daytime in the 80s and lows in the 60s for August. That's almost unheard of around here. But hey, I'll take it. I'll take it any yeah. at any time, man.
No doubt. Cool. Yeah, it's been crazy here. I mean, I don't know. I don't think we even really had a true summer here this year. You know, it's been chilly at night all summer long. You know, I think we had maybe a week of high temperatures, but other than that, much. So, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't know the intro. Closer Encounters, 40-year close encounters of the third kind. Yeah, I should stop saying closer. But anyway, 40 years. I can't believe it's been that long.
Man, I'm with you. It doesn't seem that long ago. I'll never forget it. It totally just that movie just blew me away. It was beyond my wildest imagination when it came out. It was just it was so groundbreaking in all the special effects and everything that were in it. I don't know how many times I watched it. I went to the theater and seen it three times, just so I could catch how they, you know, how it looked and how real it looked, you know.
Absolutely. Now,
by today's comparison, it's, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, it's not as good as what we have today, but like I said, back then, it was unbelievable. I couldn't figure out how they did that, how they made it work like that, you know, and how they made it look so real, you know.
I pulled the old movie out early this morning. I have it on VR also. I recorded it. Of course, when you get it on the TV, you get the commercials with it, you know. But I do have it on CD, and I'm still amazed effects had the movie. And I tell you, when you put that thing together, it just amazes me the detail that he went, you know, all that in there. It's just astonishing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it was
even the storyline was just unbelievable. What Dreyfuss went through, you know, or whatever, you know, from beginning to end, you know, from his first UFO sight way up. Actual getting on board the ship. I mean, it's just, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But crazy. I remember I the thing that struck me the most about the movie, and I'll you know, it just brought so many things together for me at that time right there. When I was a youngster, I don't really remember how old I was. I wasn't in my teens yet. I was preteen. I was maybe 11 or 12, something like that.
Right.
And my grandparents took me to go see Devil's Tower. Now, I think it was in Wyoming. Cool. In Wyoming or is it? I think it was in Wyoming. I'll never forget the way it felt around there. You know, I felt this energy field, you know, I didn't know what it was, but I'll never forget that electrical charge that I felt, you know, and my grandparents, they told me that, you know, be prepared when you see this, when you get up there, it's going to surprise you. You're going to be in for a treat. And I didn't really understand what they were talking about until I was there. And it was something that was just, I'll never forget how it felt being around there, you know, and I guess it was the first time that I was ever at a great megalithic spot, one of the wonders of the world. You know, they still don't, science or geologists still don't really understand how it was formed. And who knows? There might have been something that we're not aware of that caused it to become that.
According to mainstream science, I mean, as far as I can gather, I've been doing a lot of reading up on that particular thing lately, and I'll tell you why. Because there's been a lot of postings running around about this particular root system that supposedly has been mapped underneath it. So they're trying to say it's a giant tree, petrified or whatever. Well, it wound up being a hoax anyway, to make a long story short. But upon doing some research on it, from what I can gather, they actually think it was made by a volcano back, thousands and thousands of years ago. Now, what happened to the surrounding land mass around it to let it sit there by itself, I have no idea. I really can't get the logistics of, why that would be here by itself and not anything else around it. It's pretty crazy, but it is definitely rock. That much.
Yeah.
Oh,
They explain. Geologists have a way of explaining things that to me still doesn't make sense on a lot of things, like Monument Valley in Arizona. I've been through there also, and that was a place that you feel energy through there. It's just like Sedona. I think it's a spinoff of Sedona. I think that it's locked into that same power grid, energy grid, from emitting from the earth. These natural places, Stonehenge is another place. There's many other places around the world that where the energy emits from the earth.
About the mapping that they've done, where they've gone through and actually drew a circle, completely around, linking all these things together, and then they went from there and winds up forming a geological that winds up forming an actual pattern, symmetrical, all around the world, and each one of these hotspots, Bermuda Triangle, Stonehenge, the Great Pyramid, and all of them are on one of these lines, and they all fit perfect,
right.
one way or the other.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is how I understand it to work, that those lines are called ley lines. And they exist in areas where there is energy emitting from the earth. Now this is one reason why I would love to go to Great Britain and to visit Stonehenge and some of the places around Stonehenge, because from people I've talked to and people that live there that I've talked to, there are places where you can actually levitate off the ground. You actually defy gravity. Gravity either doesn't exist there, or gravity is manipulated along those spots. And those are on what are called ley lines. And they're the energy transitional lines that intersect with every other energy point on Earth. And they cross water. They cross, they just exist. It's just a natural forming energy grid that's there. And I believe that was what was the ancients, our ancestors. I believe this is my belief. This is what I believe that we were. We are the descendants of the colonization of Earth that was colonized by a type 1 society. that was very, very highly technically advanced, you know, and this is something that, you know, I spoke a little bit of, you know, I got into speaking about places like Nimrud, Gog, and other places around the globe where the ruins are at. And we can see, you know, this magnificent ability that they have. Well, what I really am doing and what I'm researching and what I'm coming, Clarence, I'm telling you, I'm stumbling into something here that I really, I don't know what it is, but I'm on a journey and I'm on a quest.
Cool.
One thing, before I get too off base here on this, what I'm referring to is Nikola Tesla. He wrote in his diaries that what he did is that he, when he designed the electrical system and when he designed the AC motors, electrical motors and all that stuff, he imagined it in his brain. He's seen it working in his mind first. And
sure.
what I'm tapping into is that a cosmic record or that cosmic book of knowledge of the universe that's there for all of us. He was able to see how things worked, and I'm taking his notes and his design of that and going along that line and I'm looking at things and wondering how it worked, and now I'm at the point to where I'm visualizing how it does work, like the energy power plants of the pyramids, how they worked, what made them work, and how they interconnected, and I'm beginning to see this thing. It's folding out like a movie in my mind's eye. I see this. I see it. How it's working. I see how it can work, and it's very, very plausible, and it's something that is just I don't know. I think at Compasses this is where the spirituality of us human beings come into, that if we root ourselves in either a positive energy or a negative energy, that we can do whatever we want to in either way, you know. I mean, there's a lot of evil people that are doing well in this world. I mean, you know, just because you're evil doesn't mean you're gonna fail or that you're not going to be successful. You know, there's a whole. I mean, you know, it's very much, very much right there. You know, we can see this. We can see it working. But there's also the other side of it, you know, the positive side of the force, so to speak. And I'm using the dialogue from Star Wars on that, but it really is what it boils down to is keeping yourself focused to the positive side, to doing good, to doing right, to doing what's best for everyone, and much like the Jedi, you know, the Jedi were. You know, they were in tune, and they used the have they manifest themselves, and have they became more and more stronger? They became more and more able to use the force, and I'm seeing this working in myself. I'm seeing it working, you know, and that's why I'm speaking about this. You know, it's something that's real. It's something that's plausible. It's something that is absolutely working, you know. It's at work right now, you know. I can't help but I get excited, and I want to share this, you know. It's like bundled up inside of me, and just wanting to explode out, you know. I feel like a jack in the box, you know. Somebody's cranking the handle, and I'm fixing to pop out, you know.
Are you documenting this in any way? I mean, are you trying to, I mean, you know, are you jotting this stuff down, or?
I'm making notes. I'm making notes as I'm going, and I'm making vocal recordings, a recording of what I'm doing, and you know, basically making notes. I'm getting ready to write a book, and this is all encompassing. That all started, you know, throughout the process. You know, it's just a natural flow of things start going in that direction, and I'm like, holy wow, man, this is something that's incredible, man. This is something that is really, you know, once it starts, it's not really work. It's always been at work, but I'm becoming part of it. You know, I'm becoming, you know. I am being influenced by this, and it's such a powerful thing that I can't keep it inside. You know, I can't keep it locked up. I have to talk about it. You know.
Wow. Awesome. All right. We have another caller here. Let's see who we got here real quick here. Okay. Hello, caller. You with us?
Am I here?
Yeah.
I just had a question. Did you
okay.
do 9/11? Did you do 9/11?
No.
Are you sure? I think you did 9/11.
Okay. One more.
No.
Control box. Yeah.
Yeah.
Never
fail.
Oh,
man.
You know, they're entertaining as all hell. They really are. I'm You got to laugh.
I used to take offense to things like that quite a bit, but now I just, you know, I got to laugh it off. You can't allow yourself to get too emotional and something like that, because I mean, every time you turn around, there's going to be something or someone else, you know, going to be rattling your cage and, you know,
one way
others.
To look at it, if you're coming on the show and doing that, then they're not out windows or, you know, doing whatever. So, you know, more for to
right.
them.
Right, right. Yeah.
Doc Snyder's on. Hello, Doc. She's going to call in a few. So that'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be good. And we have like 7 viewers on YouTube right now. And I'm watching Google Hangout.
Oh,
so
wow.
If anybody wants to in. If anybody like to call in, of course, the number here is 417-9108. We'd love to chat with you. So, by all means, give us a shout, whatever.
Right, right. Exactly. You know, and don't be afraid to speak out about things. You know, a lot of people, I know a lot of people are embarrassed, so they're afraid to speak out, you know,
right.
because they're afraid that somebody's going to make fun of them or, you know,
well, here's the thing. You don't have to give us your real name, and you're not live. We're not seeing your face, so, you know, it doesn't matter. that's
right.
the way it works.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's
but,
I'm the only one on Facebook right now. Yeah, I don't know. I think what happened was when I went on Facebook today and made the show and I could not send out invites. They changed the format for whatever stupid reason, and I got like 250 people that actually sent out invites at, because you can select all, and they don't have that. Well, it would take me 2 hours to sit there and select every single individual to invite.
Oh, man.
So
yeah.
So they took that part away for whatever reason. I hope they fixed it. I just went and posted it up as I did, and hopefully people would see it, and, you know, but I don't know if it's a difference or not. I really don't.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, they always change something just up to upset you, you know. I'm like, why did they take that away, you know?
But, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know. Yes,
you know it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But last night, right at the, I didn't realize it at the end of the show when it happened. But my phone died on me. It just went dead. It went completely dead. And I had to. I've been fooling with it all day today. I don't know what happened, but out of the clear blue, it just all of a sudden decided, you know, it wasn't going to work anymore. And you know, we always talk about some pretty things that are on the cutting edge of things. You know, we're bringing to light a lot of things that maybe a lot of the powers that be don't want to come to light, like free energy and stuff like that.
You know, we're listening in. You know, they got on a trigger, so to speak, you know, whatever. No doubt in my mind. I mean, you know, like I said, this thing will run 24/7. I have a big problem with it. As soon as the end of the show and we're talking on something really good, boop, you know, down it'll go. So, yeah, never fails.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It makes
somebody
you wonder. Yeah, Big Brother is wanting to, you know, they can't shut you off, but they can kind of, you know, they can interfere with you and make it.
Yeah. Make it rough. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's an epiphany that's going on throughout the world right now that can't be denied, can't be stopped. It can't be derailed or anything else because of the fact that we are stardust. We are.
All right. Steve just jumped in.
Yeah, we have it in our DNA from our ancestors, you know, from the people who were here, you know, that were long ago, these long ago societies that have been lost through the eons and through the millennia of time, we still have the ability to have to make things and to design things and to do a lot of stuff. And the thing that gets me and one thing that I look at is that a lot of the stuff that we are getting into and designing are maybe things that we shouldn't be messing with, you know. There are a lot of things that we shouldn't be playing around with, you know, because we don't know. Number one, we really don't know what's going to, like, well, I mean,
yeah.
I can see all the,
one thing that bothers me, you know.
Yeah. Well, I see all the positive things that can come, that are coming out of the Hadron Collider, you know. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, scientists are going ooh and ah at, you know, but they really don't know what they're messing with. They got no idea what they're fooling around with, and you know they could be, you know, messing around and not aware that they could be developing an event horizon right here on Earth. And
well,
if that was,
you know,
to happen, who knows? You know that you know, there we go. You know, that's you know, It's stuff to definitely wonder about, think about, you know, and to be wary of, you know, because
it surprised me that if they smash that atom into, you know, what they call the God core, they ever find it, that it doesn't just obliterate a whole new solar system, you know, and then we'll know for sure how ours started.
Right.
Oops.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It'd be too late by the time they realize that, we shouldn't have done that. You know? And you know,
another Tim. This might be Doc. Now, Doc said he was going to call and see Let's see if this is him. 402 area code. Let's see if we can do this. Hello, sir. Or ma'am.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep. How you doing?
Good.
How doing?
So that's Tim?
Yeah.
That's Tim on the other end?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
What are we talking about tonight?
Anything and everything. We actually started off about the show Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This is the 40th anniversary year. And actually, I didn't mention it, but I believe it's either this coming Friday or next Friday. You can get movie theater tickets for one night, for Friday night, and they're going to air it. You know, they're going to show it at the movies for the 40th year anniversary. Thought it was pretty cool. So I may just
cool.
do it. Yeah.
Wow.
I have that movie on DVD too. So.
Yeah, but
one of the best
that's one. That's one movie that is great. You have to see that on the silver screen. It's one of those things that.
Yeah,
the first
time when it came out, I saw it at the theater. So.
Yeah. It was cutting edge. Yeah, but I still. Think about the dialogue of this movie. How much they actually had to do their research. I mean, they brought back the planes. You know. That disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle, brought back that one ship that disappeared, all sorts of Navy and Air Force personnel, you know, da da da. I mean, they went through the whole thing, you know. Including the UFO sighting itself, the abduction part of it, you know, people getting burned by the I mean, just on and on. And then, of course, the visions and the thing saying, you know, I got to be there, you know, something on. And it was just phenomenal. I mean, the whole movie just everything they did was just unbelievable.
I got to watch that movie again. I haven't seen it for a while, so.
The concept behind it, you know, wasn't just the fact of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or Close Encounters of the First, Second, and Third Kind. It was the concept of how they went about doing it. How they made the storyline, it was just like that. It's like they were somebody who's already been there. Somebody's already been doing this. Because again, so many times Hollywood mimics real life, a lot of things in real life. And you know, I'm not saying it is, but you know, at the time, Steven Spielberg was just, I mean, his story.
That's what I was trying to think of. I was trying to think of the director's name. Steven Spielberg,
Yeah, Steven Spielberg. Yeah. He did Jaws, and then he did Close Encounters. Well, he also worked with George Lucas with Star Wars. He was involved in that. You know, he wasn't a real big he didn't have a real big involvement, but he helped out in a lot of the special effects and stuff, you know.
I'd had a job offer from ILM, Industrial Light and Magic.
No kidding.
But I had to move to California, so it wasn't like I'm not going out there.
Oh man! Oh,
my goodness.
Oh, California's not that bad.
Well, I had a good job doing computer stuff anyway, so they just wanted me to come out and tend the computer farm. So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well.
I could kick myself now, but.
Oh, my goodness. I just seen an 845 number pop up, and I think it was Rob's number. We haven't heard from Rob in a very, very long time. He calls back. Yeah.
Wow.
So if you're listening, bud, call us. We miss you.
Yes.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I got
a question.
There's
a Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Absolutely.
Isn't that where they take you away?
Well,
it is. That's where you actually are in the ship. Doing the thing. Yeah.
That's when they break out the probes. That's when they break out the probes and all that stuff, you know. And that gets a little kinky after that, you know.
Yeah.
The first thing is like writing. The second is where you actually the ship lands and you can actually touch the ship, you know, without anything else. Of course, the third encounters is actually having your visitation, you know, with the aliens themselves. And then, the fourth encounter is the abduction part of it, you know, and then they come back or whatever, you know. But that's how it works now, you know, some people, but that's the four different encounters when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I couldn't remember how those went, so.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, the visitation and abduction are both the same, but there again, I guess some people abducted just visited, so I guess, you know, you do have to draw a fine here. So,
mm-hmm.
But, and here's the thing to remember, too, now, when this movie came out in the 70s, it was a roaring time for UFOs and abductions and visitations and stuff. It was just hot, very, very hot. And our space voyagers and everything else and the first landings on the moon and blah, blah, blah.
I'll never forget everything that was going on at that time. The leaders of my workshop that I worked in the Navy. I was an aviation machinist mate, and so we were all mechanics, you know. And we had one half of the shop was jet and helo, and the other side was recip and fixed wing. So and we interchanged. We worked back and forth. We, you know, we shared the same jobs. We, you know, I got cross-rated in both helos and fixed wing, and both jet and recip. So I got to get the full knowledge, the full hands-on knowledge of the old school stuff and the new school stuff and all the new stuff going on. And a lot of the guys that I was, a lot of the old timers I was with, they started talking to us about aircraft that they were designing and building an aircraft that had the capability of being invisible radar, which is stealth. And that's when they were building the Paid Blue program was going on with Lockheed. They had the Paid Blue deal going on at Area 51, and they were developing the stealth fighter. These are things that we were learning about, and this was all cutting edge, really sci-fi stuff. This is borderline science fiction. What we were learning about. I was wanting to learn everything I could, and I was wanting to learn about the SR-71. And at that time, back in the late 70s, early 80s, everything on the SR-71 was classified. You could find a book.
A lot of it still is. So.
Yeah. You could find a book on it, but when it got up to the engine type, it'd give you the engine type, but then it would, you know, the next one down, all the information from there is classified, all the way down, man. I was like, what the heck?
No.
You
know? You do know it was our first stealth aircraft, believe it or not, and it had a kerosene engine. And it did go out of Earth atmosphere. They had spacesuits in order to fly it. So we know a lot about it, but not a lot, you know.
right.
Definitely the highest flying aircraft they ever built, as far as self-propelled.
See, all that stuff was going on, and then came Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And man, I mean, I was right there on the. I was right there, you know. I was young and learning and seeing all this stuff and open to the wonders of the world and wonders of the universe. And
absolutely.
I'm not kidding you. This is no lie. I kid you not. That one of the guys. Now there was a whole group of them that were these UFOologists. They were studying the UFOs and they were actually watching this conflict that was going on straight above our base out in outer space, that you had to use binoculars And I was out. I walked out outside the barracks one night, and there's this guy out there. This is one of my pals from one of the other work centers. He's out there, and he's going, man. He said, do you ever wonder what's going on above our heads? I said, well, sometimes. He said, well, he said, I'm going to tell you what. He said, I want to show you something. And I got to see. He showed me, and I got to see. Now, I was using the reference of stationary stars, the stars that were stationary. So, and these binoculars he had, the old Navy-style binoculars they used to use for out on the ocean to look 40 miles.
I was in the Navy,
pinpoint.
Too, so.
You can pin. Well, okay, so you know what I'm talking about. Well, he had a pair of these binoculars, and so he handed them to me, and he told me where to look at. He pointed out certain stars. He said, in this one star cluster, he said, look in that star cluster. He said, just stay looking at that. He said, stay right there. He said, you're going to see something that's going to blow you away. And sure enough, buddy guys, let me tell y'all, I watched something going on outside our atmosphere that was these things were in conflict with each other out there. And I was like, no. I was like, I handed him back his binoculars and I said, no, that's not real. He goes, man, he said, you can listen to somebody else. He said, but what, when you see it with your own eyes, what can you say? I said, exactly. Why isn't everybody else? He said, most people really don't care. Most people, and if they do care, they get scared. So we don't want to panic a whole lot of people or anything, you know. So, you know, I'm like, well, you know, and this is something that was going on, you know. I don't know how long it had been going on, but I know for a fact I seen it in, I think it was 1978 or 79. I seen all this stuff that was going on. So, you know, it was.
Time Bazaar took those orders and stuff up to the lookout point there and showed him, you know, they showed him the actual UFOs being tested, you know, and stuff.
Yeah.
And he told him the exact time, the day, the whole nine yards. And sure enough, they went up there to Peekaboo Canyon and there you go, you know. So, yeah, you know, crazy stuff.
Yeah, and now we got, you know, what amazes me. It amazes me, and it does. I don't know. I really don't know how to explain what word to use to describe it. But so, there's things that we have around us that we take for granted now. Now, one of them is LED lighting. I'm a firm believer. When it first came out, LED lighting, that is not. Where did that come from? How did we manage magically all of a sudden, poof, we're able to make all this light, this lighting, and no current. It doesn't. It's brighter. It's brighter. It lasts longer, and it uses 1/10 of the current of a regular halogen bulb. You know, how does that work? You know, and who was, you know, again, we take it for granted. It's like cell phones. We take cell phone technology for granted so much, you know, but man, there's a lot of stuff at work there that, man,
well, here's something. In the 70s, microwave oven just came out on market. Really expensive, and they were really big. They were just out, I can remember my door neighbor, you know, went home and I'm like, what's that? She goes, it's a microwave, you know. And my dad up and down, he'd never own one because they would fry your brain or stop your heart or cause cancer or, you know. Funny. Very funny.
For a while, when you couldn't be near a microwave oven if you had a pacemaker in.
That's true.
Because shielding wasn't that good on them, and that would cause interference with the pacemaker. So,
absolutely, agree.
Sure would. Nope. Yeah, they emitted a lot of radiation came out of them. That's for sure. the older style, the first generation microwave.
Big knobs on it. Sure. Switch the knob for the timer and a knob for the heat or whatever cycle you wanted it on and let it go. And yeah, you could put a whole boiler pan damn near inside of them at that time. They were so big.
Yeah.
It took two people to carry it.
Yeah. Microwave, the technology from that came from the radars in the World War II. Because there was a guy that was walking by with a candy bar in his pocket, and he's walking by one of the microwave tubes, and its candy bar melted in his pocket.
Wow. Yep. Can you imagine that? Oof. That would scare the
and
hell out
of
somebody.
Yeah, that would scare the hell out of me for sure. But anyway, then he started saying why that happened, and it was a microwave, and then you could actually cook food with it. But that was years and years before they came out commercially.
I remember the sad story when they come out about the woman that fried her dog.
A lot of those are urban legends.
True story, though. She happened, but it's just one of them things, and she threw the dog in there. Dry the dog off, and it, of course you didn't know it cooks from the inside out. I just couldn't imagine.
that's sad.
Yeah, exactly right. Crazy stuff. What a time though, the '70s and that movie. You know, Closer Encounters just so hit home. Well, it was just a couple of years after that happened. And when I seen that movie, I was just in awe. You know, I looked back. I was like, wow, you know, I couldn't tell anybody about what went on, anything like that. I kept it quiet for many, many years. But just seeing that movie, you know, that was crazy. Hit home. It really hit home hard.
It did for me too because you know, I grew up in a family that we've always been on the cutting edge of science and what was going on and astronomy and all this stuff, you know, and possibility of there being a higher advanced craft people come here to visit us, you know. Are they interdimensional travelers? Which are they time travelers? Are they, you know, what exactly, you know, these were all questions that were being asked by my grandma. My grandma was asking these questions, you know. So I grew up around all this stuff. You know, I pretty much didn't have any choice but to learn about it and to awe about it. And I'll never forget the first time that I heard the name Atlantis, and I'll never forget this. I can't remember how. I wasn't very old. I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and I heard the word Atlantis, and I was like, there was something that went through me. I remember the thought process of going, where is it at? Where is it? Have they found it? It was like something inside me was saying it was there, that I, you know, that I was aware of it, but that something had happened, that there was a catastrophic event that took place, and it was at the center of it, and that was the last that was known. You know, and this was in my conscience. This was in my mind. You know, and I'm like, what's going on here? You know, that's the first time that I was aware or seen the possibility of past lives. and mm-hmm. and all that because of that. Because I'll never forget, you know, and to this day, and well, you look around, people are still and they're looking for Atlantis because inherently we know it's there. Inherently in our DNA, we know that Atlantis is real. We don't just have these books by Plato and going back through history and all these other people. Nostradamus spoke of Atlantis. What's his name? Edgar Cayce. He was the latest one, pretty much, that was a big proponent of the lost right. of the lost continent, you know, and what was going on and how it would be found and all this, you know. And I think that they have found it. I think that they are that either archaeologists or scientists or somebody have found proof of it, but they're sitting on divulging this information, you know, they're keeping it from yeah. us, you know.
Yeah, they just had a thing on TV about that. As a matter of fact, on that HAM channel or something, I can't remember now what it's actually called, but. And they were doing a new thing about it, where they found this down there, and they've dug up certain artifacts and were trying to date these things out and whatever. But pretty interesting. My thought is,
was that the one over in southern Spain that they found?
Yes.
The city with the rings.
Yep.
That's Göbekli Tepe, as in Turkey.
No, I'm talking about they found, they think they found Atlantis in southern Spain, right down by Gibraltar.
Something like that.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'm not, okay, that's something that I'm not.
Yeah, this just came out. I've heard about it for a couple of years, but I mean, I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard about it, but.
Oh no, they just did a documentary on their search, you know, where they did the scuba diving, they sent down the unmanned sub and all that stuff, trying to grab artifacts and doing whatever. And but here's my point about that, because we found a bunch of places on the oceans, I mean, edges of different mainstream cities, you know, and stuff. And of course, all of them have a claim of being Atlantis, you know. Nothing so far is actually proved, you know, whatever. My suggestion, if they buy this world map that we were just talking about, where, you know, the ley lines and all that stuff, if this place is that important, you would think it would be on that same parallel or on that same line. Why don't you just model that and sonar herself across it and see what you come up with, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
you could have to see Ballard. The guy who found the Titanic.
Yeah.
I don't know, spitballing, but I mean, I was thinking about it. I'm like, that would be the way to find it. If it's going to be built on one of these lines, then I'd follow one of them tracks and just sonar it on across until you hit it, you know, or hit it something anyway, you know. But, of course,
yeah.
There's too many lines going through the ocean. I don't know. But.
Well, the thing about it is that for the most part, Atlantis itself, that continent, that island continent, was some type of catastrophic event took place that pretty much vaporized it, and blew parts and statues and pieces of it all over the world, and that one area right there outside of Bimini, what they call the Bimini Road off the island of Bimini in the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's where Cayce was talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, that area right there, that's just a piece of what was blown away from the area that was annihilated, you know, and there's bits, other bits and pieces and statues and this and that they're finding out in the middle of nowhere with no reason for it being there, you know. So it, it, you know, I'm saying, well, that's because it was blown apart, and these are just, you know, these are just the remnants. These are the remnants of what was left, you know.
Well, that makes as much sense as anything, so.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just saying, this is my hypothesis on this. This is, you know, I've done study on it. I've done a lot of research and study, and I've set back on a lot of different issues, and one of them being Atlantis. That's my hypothesis. That along with the noblemen from Atlantis, they went out to different areas of the world, and I believe it was in the legend that somewhere along the line, some people think that though one of the Greek gods or one of the Egyptian gods was one of the descendants of Atlantis, that he brought the knowledge, he brought the mathematics and the architecture and all that stuff, and brought it to Egypt and gave it to the pharaohs to use, and gave, you know, started teaching that, mm-hmm. And that's where the Egyptian dynasties got their ability to do their buildings and to make their statues and all that stuff, you know. But here's the thing, you know, there was tools that was involved in doing all that stuff, you know, and everybody's going, well, where's the tool at? You know, anything that's any man-made tool, anything that's made, it, you know, is not going to survive. It's going to deteriorate over. You know, it may last a few thousand years, but after 3 to 4, let's say 5,000 years, there's not going to be any resemblance to anything of any equipment or any machinery or anything else. You know, it's going to be gone. It's not going to be there. You know, so that's why we're not going to find that.
Look at that! Look at that blade that they found with King Tut, made out of meteorite.
That's true.
Yep. Now, if they had that kind of capability, then who knows what else they could do? You know,
we don't have further evidence.
But there's evidence, and it's with his knife blade alone, and nobody knows how it was made or who would manage to make it.
Right.
Nobody knew that, you know. So
yeah,
something's fishy, you know.
Yeah, well, there's another sword that was found in China that baffles archaeologists and scientists. They can't figure out how it's made out of steel, made out of iron, but yet it hasn't. There's not one sign of rust or any oxidation or anything on it. You know. And it's 2,500 years old. How were they able to make a metal like that? And, you know, where did they get the knowledge at for the metallurgy to build that? You know,
quite honestly, if it comes to Chinese and Japanese and stuff like that, they were way ahead of their time as metal. Quite honestly, I mean, I think they were, you know, like the gunpowder, different other things. They were on that stuff like hot tomatoes, you know. Now, I'm not sure about that particular sword that you're talking about, but it would surprise me none of them had a hands up on that because, you know, they were quite entrepreneurs. Yeah.
Right.
They were heavy into that.
Well, the Japanese also. Their samurai swords are just unbelievable. The amount of metallurgy, the technology that somebody had to let them know that if you did this, it would make that. If you would add a little bit of pound in a little piece of charcoal onto your carbon onto your steel as you're folding it and melting it and hammering it out and everything, that it will help to strengthen it, you know, and if you add a little bit of this, it will make stainless steel, you know, and all this, you know. How did they know that?
Right.
Who told them that? You know, that's not something that you just come, you know.
Yeah. You don't just stumble on it. Well, let's add a little bit of this and see what happens to it. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, with two-ton, you know, with King Tut's knife blade, you know, made out of meteorite, I mean, how in the hell, you know, didn't know anything about metallurgy. I mean, nothing. you know, just fall on the ground and it was a molten blob. I picked it up or what? I mean, you know, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I know. I hear you.
I would, you know, they know. I don't know. I mean, they smelt gold with that because everything they did was, you know, they made gold leaf and different other things, and copper. But wow! Now, who would have thought picking up a meteorite, a chunk of meteorite, and heating it up to that degree? I can't imagine how hot it would have to be to melt it down to even make metal out of it. But, you know, it's just phenomenal. That thing just blows my mind every time I think about it. You know,
well, you got iron and copper and gold. Those are all, you know, pure elements that you could work, you know, put in a fire and heat and whatever. But then you get your alloys like Tim was just talking about, and that gets into a whole different ball of wax. So,
that's something that I'm not saying that, because I know as human beings we're pretty intelligent as far as being able to think things up and to come up with stuff and to design working tools and stuff like that. But when it comes to working with metal, working with iron, working with ferrous and non-ferrous metals, there's a type of science that's involved in that goes beyond just trial and error. You know what I mean? These are things that there's a science that's involved in there, and for it to have been going on back in the time when our you know our archaeologists, mainstream archaeologists, are saying that we were just coming out of the caves. You know, we were basically had I don't even think that the wheel had even been invented yet. You know, 5,000 years ago.
If you believe in that, civilization, you know, they had steel invented. You know, we talked about that a few times too. They had writing, they had civil, you know, they had the wheel, they had everything.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they used to use logs to roll things with too. So I would think somebody saw that rolling log and just made it bigger. And
I've done some blading and some research on that. And you can move some items using rollers or using logs. But when you get to above 2.5 tons, anything above two and a half tons, are fighting yourself to move anything. You're digging. Your rollers are going to dig into the ground before. Say 5 tons. I'm just going to go to 5 tons. You go to 5 tons. You try to roll something on rollers of 5 tons. You can't do it. You can't. You can move it 2 or 3 inches at a time. That's it. You know, and then you got to stop, re-rig, and redo it, and all that. That's way too much. I mean, if they had done that, if they used that type of design and built and say that's how they went about building the pyramids would still be, they would still be building the pyramids today. You know? If they were building it with rollers, they're putting those stones in place with rollers, they'd still be working on it today. Because we're not talking about we're talking about building all three of those pyramids, and they were all three built simultaneously. You know, basically, they're right around the same time, you know. And they were built, they were purposely built as a device to gather and to generate electrical energy. And
it's a form of
I've said this all along. This is long before Christopher. I heard anybody like Christopher Dunn or Graham Hancock or anybody else speak of the technology that was behind it. I had already come up with this. I had already thought that there was something going on there that these weren't built as a temple or as a place to bury somebody in. They're not a burial chamber or something like that. They were built and not only that, but they were not built by the Egyptians. The Egyptian dynasties, when the Egyptian dynasty started, the pyramids were already there. The pyramids are a lasting ring. They are a in our face, true testimony to Atlantis. The pyramids are direct descendants of Atlantis, of the Atlantean Empire.
Here's my question, pyramids. Why pyramids? Why is it every continent around the world had some form of pyramid?
I was just going to say that too because they generated along those
mathematical lines and those mathematical formulas and everything that exist there. The geometry and everything is set up to create electrical energy. You look at Teotihuacan in Mexico, the pyramid of the sun. That is just unbelievable. The amount of, we look at awe at the pyramids of Giza, and they are a wonder. They are just unbelievable. But when you see the pyramid of the sun at Teotihuacan, that just blows you away because the amount of architecture that's involved there is just off the chart. That is not just throwing stones on top of each other to make that, because that one side is a complete cannot do that by just throwing stones together. That was purposely done. Those were purposely fitted. They were, and the amount of time and everything, if they were chiseled by hand, they had some type of tools or some type of devices that allowed them to cut that stone and to help them to build all these things. There is a perfect example. Then you go to Southeast Asia, and you look at in Cambodia at Angkor Wat, and you see the sophistication and the amount of detail that's in stone and granite and hard granite and durite. The hardest stones that are next to diamond, which means that they had to be cut with diamond. And you look at
harder.
To me, that's just in my face. That is definite signs that there was some type of high tech tools being used in ancient times that weren't tools that we're not aware of, and an electrical energy field that we still aren't able to put to work.
Oh, we still can't. We can't do a lot of that stuff now. Even well, we can, but it takes a long time.
Right.
Exactly.
But that's what I'm studying is reinventing these tools and the sophistication and the energy grid and everything. How it works and all that stuff. And it includes all and they're all interlocked with each other. Because again, all these places are set at these high energy places on the Earth where they're interconnected by these lines, and they're all at these on these points. Anchor Wat, Teotihuacan, even Chichen Itza, and I don't know. I can think of so many different names of the Mayan cities down in the Yucatan. There's Pakal and all them, on and on, all these, they're all those little cities, those villages, and all those temple complexes were all built at areas where the energy emits from the earth. So they used that. They had that to tap into as their electrical supply, and then they had the tools that went with it. That worked right there with it. And that is what I'm wanting to tap into, to find, to kind of reinvent, or to, like Tesla did, when he designed the AC electrical system, when he designed, the AC motors and all that stuff, he did it by first thinking about it in his head. Well, that's what I'm doing. I'm thinking about things in my head, seeing how it works and seeing how it can, along the line here, maybe I'll get with some other people that are already doing it, because I know that there's already other people that are involved in doing this research. There are other people. I'm not the only one. There are many, many, many other individuals and groups around the world that are doing research on this stuff, and so I know that this is something that is viable, something that's real, something that is tangible, something that and something that we can use and put to work today, And it's total clean. You talk about clean energy. This is clean, renewable energy without doing any harm at all to the earth or to our environment.
You know what's sad though, Tim, is the governments and that would not allow it.
Oh, I know. They don't want. No.
Well, yeah, I know the Feds came in and took all of Tesla's notes and all his research.
Oh yeah, they sure did.
And stuff when he died. So.
Yep. Took all his patents and everything, and that's how come Edison and everybody else went on, because they bought off their patents
Westinghouse and Edison had already gotten a lot of the other stuff that the government didn't get, they already have. So a lot of those things are are tucked away in a hidden vault somewhere, some evil.
Patents are renewable. When it comes to patents, patents only good for so many years, and then it comes up for grabs. And whoever bought or has the money to buy that patent or renew that patent, that's who gets it, and that worked. And government or whoever confiscated all his stuff, his patents until it ran out. And then they could...
I think they erased it from the patent office, is what I think.
I do, honestly. But, unfortunately, that's how it worked. But whoever got the most money at the time won. I mean,
It's all government. It's all government agencies. So you're looking at, they're just,
Back then, who was the main people? But Morgan's, Westinghouse, and there's only a handful of
Rockefeller. Yeah.
So, J.P. Morgan is one of the big ones. I mean, there was a fight, between oil and electric and whatever at the time, our history is just nuts. I mean, when you really stop about it, it really is. Our booming age here in the United States, what do they call it? There's a special name for it. Our industrial age, exploded.
Industrial revolution.
Pretty much. We only had a handful of people that had the money to make it roll. I mean, that's how it was,
Yeah.
And they bought presidents. Honestly, they bought presidents. That's how it worked back then. So, going back.
They bought it. They paid for it to be covered up.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
But,
And then they drug Tesla up. It was Edison drug Tesla up and set him up in the motel there in New York City, and that's where he spent the rest of his life. You know, and he became a madman. You know, I mean, basically, you know, and everybody, you know, everybody says he went crazy. Well, he didn't go crazy. He was drugged up. Yeah, they had him. You know, Edison done tapped into, you know, tapped in. This is my
I'd
belief.
Like to know the
this is what I think.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd like to know the real. I know. Really. That much of a threat.
Kind
of
like Howard
Hughes
out in Las Vegas.
Right. Yeah. A recluse.
He just went
right?
nuts out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was a
yeah.
nut. I mean, everybody knew that.
He ended up going crazy after a while. You know, he was over impulsive. He had OCD. He suffered from severe OCD. You know, and those stories you see, those movies you see about, you know, the movie The Aviator is a perfect example of. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend.
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah.
It's a story of Howard Hughes. It'll show you how crazy he was. You know. I mean, he wasn't really crazy, but it developed as time went on. You know, things got more and more and more. Like his obsession to be clean, you know, and he couldn't stand women who wore jewelry. Tesla was the same way. He could not stand women that wore earrings or necklaces. It just freaked him out. He couldn't handle it, man.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's a fact. You know, who's to say when you have a working mind like Tesla or Einstein or anybody, you become what they call eccentric, you know. A lot of people said that Einstein was crazy, you know, that he was delusional, you know, and he never combed his hair. Well, you know, this is the guy that came up with so many different theories of relativity, you know. Yeah, the general theory of relativity. You got the da 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 this type of relativity, that type, you know, and they all made sense. They all work.
The only model that works. Yeah, isn't that something?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they all absolutely work, but you know, there's a certain amount of eccentric. You become, you know, you do stuff that what seems to be normal, what people call normal, you're not, you know, but Just because you don't fit somebody's depiction of what they think you should be doesn't mean that you're not intelligent. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people think that I'm halfway lunatic, you know, because of what I come up with, you know, what I talk about. But I can sit down if people have time. If they, you know, I'm willing to sit down with somebody and give them step by step by step how these things work. But most people don't want to. All they want to do is exploit other people's eccentricities and to make other people look stupid. You know, that's what people like to do. You know, they like to make other people look inferior. And do that any chance.
You got a lot of that going around.
Yeah.
Always has done.
That's just human.
I think it's human nature.
That's human nature. Yeah.
I see Brian's on, Catherine's on, Steve's on, Gail's on. Hello, everybody. Yeah, got a little group.
Oh, I forgot. Facebook. I forgot I was even on Facebook. So.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, you've been out. And I still got a couple of three viewers on Hangouts or YouTube, one of the two. I'm not really sure which one it is because they're both the same camera, so I don't know which side is which.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, kind of funny. I have to use one camera for the YouTube and Google and then the other camera for the Facebook one. So, it's funny. But, hello, my friend. Hello, Brian. Yeah. But,
well, we were talking about the pyramids earlier and how they built them and stuff. What I want to know is how they did Stonehenge.
Well, I do.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, because the stones that came from that came from 23 miles away, and there's really no flat overland route to get there.
Hey, the blue stones came from 150 miles away. They came from Wales. The blue stones came from 150 miles away, and not only that, but the only way that they can figure that they got them there was to drag them there. And there's no way. I mean, you drag them up and down hills, across rivers and stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
drag them to us.
Yeah, that.
No. Ain't no way.
That's. But Stonehenge in Karnak, in France. Megalithic sites that I've been looking at, and now follow me here, guys. Now on all these big things like that, we just look at it. The stones were all that was there. What if stones are used? What if now and if not, what if stones are used like that to help to generate the energy, or to help the energy to flow?
Sure.
What if those stones? Yeah. What if those stones were the interior, the integral foundation of a much larger structure? That when they were in operation, when they were being used for the purpose they were put in place for, they were covered up by buildings or by some other structure that was using the energy that was coming through the natural earth emitting energy that was being generated and being magnified by the by these large megalithic stones to use them for whatever, for power source, for the list could go. I've always looked at Stonehenge as being a rocket port, a launch port for rockets, because it's built along the same lines as the old gantry launch where Apollo 1 burned up, God rest her souls, back in 1968. It looks like could be Stonehenge. Basically, but made out of iron, you know. But
Pad 34A kind of looks like it too. I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah.
34A is where they at least launch the shuttles from, and the Saturns.
Right.
And that's where they do some of the SpaceX stuff out of too.
And other places like Baalbek in Lebanon, that the foundation there. Or the temple complex, where the Romans had built their huge acropolises and their buildings on top of, you know, that was all afterwards. But the platform itself is stationary for some type of big something heavy, and something big was sitting there, landing there.
Sure.
You know, it could have been a landing platform or a landing and launching platform. Well, I think that Stonehenge.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking that Stonehenge could be one of those places like that also, but that it goes back much, much earlier. That's one of their first working platforms they had for it. And later on, as time went on, they got bigger and bigger and better at doing what they did. And along came Baalbek. But also Karnak, when you look at Karnak, the way the stones are laid out and the geometry that is at work there is not just that those stones were not just placed in lines and rows like that, you know, just for ornamental purposes. There was a reason for it. It had a function. There was a functionality to it. And
might have been some type of an antenna system or a communication system.
Could be. It's hard telling what it was. Yeah.
They're saying it's kind of like a solar calendar type deal where you can, you know, chart the seasons and whatnot on it, but it seems kind of elaborate for just that.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Well, same thing with Stonehenge. I mean, just about any kind of megalithic structure you find, and I don't care where it is in the world, they always seem to be lined up with the solstices one way or the other, you know.
Well, you can always line up on a solstice. You can line up anything. I mean, for crying out loud.
Sure.
Under that same design, I had my window set up in my apartment back in 2002. I had it set up where I knew exactly when the equinox was. I knew when the day of equinox happened because the crack I had in my curtains and where the sun shined on my walls across from it, you know, so I could tell what day was going to be the equinox days in the spring and in the fall, and then I also knew the summer solstice and the winter solstice. I could tell all that, wherever you're at, you can make anything line up to work for you. You know, shadows can work this and do that, you know.
That's why I was saying it seems kind of elaborate just to do that with. But.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess until we invent time travel, we're never going to find out.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that we already have time travel. It's just not privy. We're us regular civilians or us regular people. We're not privy to that. But we are doing, and we do have the capability to time travel right now. I know this.
Right.
I know this as much as I know anything in the world, because of things that I've seen, things that I've witnessed, things that I have seen with my own two eyes. These are not things that somebody told me about. These aren't something that I read about. These are things that I have actually seen firsthand. So I know, and when you get to that point, and when you have been there, you know, and you have walked, you know that 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 you know, and it goes on, you know, infinitesimally that way, because I know that I know that I know, you know, there's no denying that, you know, when the truth is going to be divulged to us is anyone's guess, but there's more to life, there's more to the world than what we have been taught and what we have been grown up to believe is real. The truth is
reality. I believe that totally.
Reality is a whole lot different and way, way more different and a lot more beautiful than anything that you can possibly imagine, y'all. And for whatever purpose, and mainly because the governments of the world want to keep everybody in control. They want to control the population. They want to be able to. They want to be able to, for nothing else, to control to collect your taxes, to have you pay for their whatever and do this and do that. You know, and as long as you work and you pay your taxes and you be a good little robot, you're a good person. You know, and you get your little trinkets along the way, you know, but if you step out of line, you're a malfunctioning unit, and they'll shut you up, and they'll put you in a prison, or they'll lock you away.
Then the Men in Black come and get you.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly, yeah.
But that's a completely different story. No.
No, it's not really. It's just a different, another tangent to the same story.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's just shooting off on a different tangent.
Yeah.
But, guys, I hate to say it.
See, that's...
We've got
it
here.
Oh, no, not again. Really?
Yeah.
But it's good that we can come together on a platform like this and speak about this and hope to enlighten people to not believe what we're saying, but to do their own research. And you don't have to look very deep below the surface to find the truth. I'll tell you that much right now. It's not that far hidden. But if you want to. I mean, if people want to find the truth, it's out there. It's there. Be prepared, because it's a lot different than what the reality of it is a lot different than what we're told and what we're taught.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's the truth. The caller there, I see we had is 424 area code. Sorry I didn't be able to take your call because we were running out of time and everything. So hopefully, you know, next show you can call us back and we'll get you on. Sorry about that. My apologies.
When is your next show going to be?
I'll probably do one again tomorrow night. I figure, I got
right
time off here. Might as well get up. So.
cool. All right. All right, Clarence. All right. Cool, man.
So we'll back here again tomorrow night. 6 o'clock.
Same time, same place, same bat station.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I want to thank everybody that joined us on Facebook and YouTube and Google Hangouts and everything, and I'm glad people are, you know, interacting and they're with us, so cool. And we just went over our 300th like here, or 94, I think it was, on the Closer Encounters page, and I want to thank everybody for that.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Yes, yes.
Woo-hoo.
Thanks, you all.
So, Doc, I thank you for calling. You know, same thing.
Yeah, Doc. Good talk to you, man.
Yep.
Good,
bye, Tim.
Definitely good talk to you.
Bye, Clarence.
All right. You guys have a great night, and thank you.
All right. Good night.
Rest of the weekend,
then.
Good night.
Good night. Again, tomorrow evening. Thank you all for joining.
I want to thank you all for listening to Closer Encounters. Please remember to like, follow, and share. And until we meet again, keep your eyes to the skies. Thank you.